we present Best Sellers. Best Sellers, featuring great works by famous authors of today and yesterday. In June 1942, two German U-boats headed quietly into American waters, aimed at two isolated beaches. On board each craft was a team of four men, eight specialists, primed for an audacious mission, codenamed Operation Pistorius. But neither team knew of another passenger with an even greater mission that could shake the world. He was the Ninth Man. The Ninth Man. A chilling story based on historical fact by John Lee and dramatized for radio in 25 episodes by Victor Maxon.
Outside the store, his hoe over his shoulder, a pair of ragged gardening gloves and a trowel encrusted with dried mud sticking out of his pocket, the Ninth Man, or Dietrich, as some of us would come to know him, stood for a few moments looking at the Amangenset street, trying to decide what to do. How much had the Coast Guard really discovered? Was the young clerk talking through his hat, spreading the usual wartime rumors? Did they really know anything at all? There was no doubt that this time there could be a great deal more to it. What the hell had happened on that beach before the U-202 men had left it? Whatever it might have been, the four agents seemed unaware of the furore it had created. In his guise as a workman, chopping skunk cabbage and fiddleheads from the lawn of a shuttered house near the station, he had observed them boarding the train that morning on their way to New York, seeming to blend in naturally with their surroundings. Had anything really gone wrong? Or were the Americans at Amangenset being oversensitive to what they imagined might happen to a people so far away from the European battle scene?
Opinions?
Well, it appears authentic, sir. Three of our agents have examined the confiscated crates. They found an explosive material in brick form, some shaped to look like lumps of coal, and painted black, fuse coils, detonators, incendiary devices disguised to look like pen and pencil sets. Practically a full arsenal, sir. Our New York office has concluded that the contents are of foreign origin.
That doesn't necessarily mean German.
Well, there are the uniforms, sir. The Coast Guard dug up a duffel bag which contained four sets of military fatigues. The buttons bear the insignia of the German Navy.
Perhaps it was some kind of sortie. Perhaps they merely buried the explosives on the beach and went back to the submarine.
Well, it's unlikely. Why would they discard the uniforms?
I don't like it. But it looks as though we're stuck with it. Get on the teletype. I want our best New York agents out there on that beach where the explosives were found. Rent a house somewhere in the area. A full 24-hour watch. If anyone comes out for those boxes, I want our people to be there waiting.
Yes, sir.
And a team to question aliens. I want every alien on that island interrogated. Nobody could have landed that smoothly without help.
Yes, sir. Anything else?
That depends. Where are those crates now?
They've been transferred to our New York offices.
Good. Now, I want the Coast Guard frozen out of this. If we have to risk taking the blame, then I don't intend to share the credit. Thank them for their cooperation and shut the door in their faces.
Yes, sir. I'll pass the word along discreetly.
Amateurs. The world is full of amateurs. Even many of the so-called professionals are amateurs. Imagine the U.S. Navy allowing German U-boats to wander at will off the East Coast. The U-boats didn't come until January, more than a month after war was declared. Yet they caught the U.S. Navy totally unprepared. Five lousy, miserable U-boats. Only five. But in the first 10 days, they sank 25 American merchant ships. Dear heaven, it was a shooting gallery. A paradise for German submarines. Ships running fully lit, lighthouses and navigational buoys blinking away. Citizen resort areas lighting up the horizon. Now, 6 months later, every beach on the U.S. coast is dirty with oil from sunken ships. And the whole of New England and the central Atlantic states are strangling in a gasoline shortage.
But for all their rampaging successes, the first time they've been brazen enough to try landing Nazi spies fresh from Germany right here in the United States.
By heaven, we've already proved to the German masterminds that they're not dealing solely with amateurs or inept professionals. They know when it comes to spies, they're up against a top-notch professional organization in the FBI that won't blow it. Though sometimes I wonder if we weren't too efficient. Maybe we should have left a few crumbs instead of taking the whole loaf. A few crumbs for later arrivals like these to come and collect.
Yeah, it was so easy. It was like shooting fish in a barrel when we picked up all the Seabold contacts.
Only now we have no barrel waiting for these men. Where the hell are they? How do you catch Virgin agents once they disappear underground?
George Dash knew New York intimately, and with good reason. Since stowing away as a youth on a ship bound from Germany to Philadelphia, he'd spent many of the intervening years as a New York busboy, fry cook, finally gaining status as a waiter. He tried again and again to elevate his station in life, but without success. When he went back to Germany, he lied and told officialdom that he'd been a salesman for an export-import company. Sounded more dignified. At America, Nutt refused him the dignity and pride in work that he felt he had the right to aspire to. He might never have returned to Germany.
Now the Fatherland sent me back. Seems like a cruel joke. Oh, well, who can know the place better than I? There is that to it, I suppose. I can at least sink into complete anonymity in the city. But the problems, dear God, the problems. Why didn't the hierarchy think more carefully about some things before sending us here?
We have enough money to start a bank. We can't live like kings here.
We will do nothing of the kind. The money in the satchel is mainly in consecutive notes. $50 bills that reached Germany before the war. How are we to know that the United States hasn't kept track of the numbers and is just waiting for the bills to show up?
You worry too much about nothing. The war for them has only been on for a few months.
I don't care how long the Americans have been in the war. It could be long enough for them to have considered this point. There were gold certificates among the bills that Kappa first received from Abwehr II. The man in charge obviously had no idea that they'd been withdrawn from circulation years before. If we hadn't known and tried to spend one of these, an investigation would have started before we could have even got out of the store.
I still think you are nitpicking. The certificates found their way there quite by accident.
I cannot stress this too strongly. Spend no more than one bill in any one place at a time. Now, as arranged, we're going to split up, do some shopping, and get out of our soiled clothing as quickly as we can. You, Hank, and Kieran will meet us late in the afternoon at the Automat at 8th Avenue and 34th Street, Manhattan. Obviously, we must change as many bills as we can to have a supply of safe money, but proceed cautiously. Get the feel of things first. We'll meet at the Automat around 4:30 to 5 o'clock and compare notes.
Thank you.
One way or another, it's been quite a day. I feel like a new man. No trouble with the bills, as far as I could see?
No. Everything seemed to go very well. Still, we spread the money around very nicely and very wisely, I think. We have enough safe cash in hand for a while.
Yeah. Where the blazes those other two got to? They should have been here by now.
Yeah. Here they come now. Hell, just look at the way they're dressed.
We saw a parade on Fifth Avenue. Enormous. There must have been at least 100,000 soldiers.
I wish I'd had a machine gun. We could have ended the war right there. What's wrong with you, George? What are you staring at?
You. The way you're dressed. Loud jackets. Gaudy shirts. Where on earth did you buy them? Couldn't you have been more careful? Don't you realize you'll attract attention dressed like that? People will look at you.
What's the matter with you, George? What are you so damn nervous about? We aren't the only people who like these sort of clothes. Peter's two-tone black and white shoes are not exactly conservative, are they? There's nothing to be so nervous about.
It's not a question of being nervous. There's no sense in looking for trouble.
Say, did you know they have gas rationing up here? You have to get little stickers to put on your car. You should see the lines of cars waiting for the gas.
A man told us it's because of the U-boats prowling off the East Coast. They're sinking everything in sight. It makes you proud, doesn't it?
I expected it. Right. Down to business. We'd better not spend too much time together here. It's too public. Maybe we should check into hotels now. Peter and I will take rooms at the Governor Clinton. It's big and busy, so it's just the kind of place we'll need. I'll be registered under the name of George John Davis from St. Louis. Peter will use his own name. If there's an emergency, call on the phone. Don't come by.
All right. Where do you want us to stay?
Try the Chesterfield. It's near here. And don't forget to buy suitcases before you check in. Hotel clerks notice people without suitcases.
Stop worrying. We know all that.
Just be careful. Also, I think maybe we should stay close to our hotels for a while. Stay off the streets for a week or so until Curling and the others arrive from Florida. We don't want to make any foolish mistakes.
But this? Is our leader frightened?
Of course not. Only, well, don't forget that boy on the beach last night. If he tells anyone about us, they'll start searching. We may as well wait until things cool off a bit.
Let them search. How can they possibly find us in a city of so many millions, eh? Tell me that.
I just meant we should be careful. It makes sense to be careful.
All right. But hiding in hotel rooms is the quickest way to attract attention. We can at least start looking over the bus stations and railroad depots, the department stores owned by the Jews, eh?
What for?
What do you think? Stick a couple of bombs in their ears, that's what for. What better way to tell the world we are here?
Let's get one thing clear. Just before we left Germany, Kappa warned Curling and myself that we might be receiving special instructions quite soon after our arrival here about another priority mission. He wouldn't say anything further because it's top secret. But we were to get established safely and wait.
But how can anyone send us fresh orders this late in the game? It would take more than 2 weeks to even get out of Germany and through the various decoy addresses in neutral countries before it could be sent to the general delivery address here in the States.
Yeah, that thought has occurred to me, too. But there must be substance in it, or we would not have been given the orders. As far as I'm concerned, an order is an order. There will be no preliminary bombing. Do you hear? None. Our orders are that we do absolutely nothing until we hear that Curling and his men are safely in position. What do you want to do? Get them into trouble?
Oh, we don't have to plant the bombs right away. Just look around and make some plans, huh?
Yeah. Kappa discussed many possibilities during training as to why we're here, such as halting airplane production, blasting New York's bridges and rail supplies. The list of targets is endless. Aluminum plants in New York, the hydroelectric plant at Niagara Falls, the Ohio River locks near Pittsburgh, and heaven knows what else. But we won't rush out and plant trivial little bombs anywhere without instructions. So don't even think about it. I will tell you when we are ready to start. Come on, Peter. I think it's time we got moving.
Hey, wait a minute. When do we meet next?
In a few days.
I think we should meet tomorrow. Yeah?
Okay, tomorrow night, then. We'll meet you at Grant's tomb at 6:30. Mm. Come on, Peter.
You know, Richard, I felt good when I came in here. Now, I don't feel so good. Our glorious leader appears to have a case of the nerves, huh? And it's catching.
Yeah, I think you're right. I feel nervous, too.
What do you say we find our own hotel, huh?
I think that would be a very good idea.
Well, here we are, the Hotel Martinique. $5.50 a day. More expensive than the Governor Clinton, but at least it gives us peace of mind.
Yes, amen to that.
Then let us drink to our new names. To me, Henry Keno, and to you, Richard Quintas.
Prost.
Prost.
Sunday newspaper I could find. Nothing. Not a mention of the rumored submarine landings on Long Island. Does that mean everything is all right? Was that kid in the store talking a lot of nonsense? A neurotic trying to bolster his own ego? Where did he get it all from? He even quoted names. Perhaps everything isn't all right. Newspaper silence could be some kind of public ruse. Perhaps they're waiting to draw them out in the open. What the hell happened on the beach that night? That night. Only a couple of days ago, but already it seems ages. Should I try and make contact with George Dash and find out? No.
On no account are you to try and make contact with the men. They must be fully settled in. And you must be absolutely sure in your mind that they are free of suspicion before you make your presence known to them. If anything should happen to compromise them, any stupid little thing that might affect their mission, that is just unfortunate. Nothing must be allowed to affect yours.
Yes. Either Dash and his men survive their own difficulties and appear when I summon them, or I wait and rely on Edward Curling's team when they make their way from Florida.
On that Sunday morning of June 14th, 1942... Dietrich, as some who had met him had come to know him, spent some time in the men's cloakroom at Penn Station, cleaning and brushing the sand and dirt from his clothing before buying his ticket. In the disinfected sanctuary of a pay toilet, he unwrapped one of the oilskin packets of identification cards and selected a driver's license and draft registration made out to Frank Daniels of Waxahachie, Texas. He also peeled the oilskin from his gun for a quick look, to make sure the salt water hadn't got to it, then rewrapped it and stuffed it back into his belt, under the leather jacket where he hoped it would stay until he reached Washington.
Wow, what a fartillo bombing Tokyo. Sure, it went for the books.
Yeah. What the hell do you think they got there?
Hey, do you think they might have flown over from one of the carriers, maybe from one of the islands?
That's a heck of a long way.
I don't know. It sure was beautifully planned. Must have been planning it for ages.
Well, like Pearl Harbor in reverse.
Makes you proud to be in uniform.
What is he doing, that ignorant swine of a corporal, standing there, staring at me, just looking for trouble? Yes. Ah, the hell with him. There are more important things to worry about. What other things lie behind this mission of mine? There seems to be so much intrigue, the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing. Didn't take much special training to deduce from the talk around Abwehr that Hitler was screaming for action against the United States. Well, if things go as planned, the United States will have more trouble than they could ever have imagined. Hitler and Canaris. How strange. I've never seen either of them in person, yet I know that something is not right between them. Oberstleutnant Gretznow was most emphatic that no other Abwehr man was to know of my dual target. Odd how put out my superiors looked at even the mention of the name Canaris. It's quite possible that he is not even aware of the report that the British Prime Minister and the United States President are to meet secretly. Much less could be aware that 9 of his own men have been commandeered to execute those 2 leaders. No, Abwehr hums with secrets that are not secrets to any half-observant man. Were I the head of Abwehr, I would ensure far stricter internal security.
Hey, Pete, what do you think of the sort of creeps that travel on trains these days?
Yeah, a bit white about the gills, a sort of lily livet, you might say.
Yeah, yeah, look better in uniform, any sort of uniform. Might improve the color a bit.
Change the yellow to a more ruddy complexion.
If you like my place next to the window, you're welcome. I'll be getting off shortly.
Well, that's quite a limp he has. You think it's genuine?
Yeah, we don't need your place, Daisy. Scram. We don't need any help from a cripple, far F.
Yeah, F for full.
Certain of it. The soldier was right. The limp was faked. For a few moments, the ninth man's thoughts dwelt on the bulky Mauser 7.63 automatic in the oilskin covering in his belt. An oversized hand weapon with a chunky square magazine in front of the trigger guard, making it look more like a machine gun than an automatic pistol. Accurate, efficient, and thoroughly deadly. The young soldiers might have had second thoughts had they known about the gun and the cold, ruthless efficiency of the man who knew so well how to use it and had chosen it himself with such great care for his mission.
That was Episode 4 of The Ninth Man by John Lee. Adapted and directed for broadcasting in 25 episodes by Victor Matheson. You have been listening to Best Sellers, featuring the masterworks of famous authors that have captured the imagination of the world.